Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on KX93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
KXRNLP, Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach.
And welcome to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage. And this is a show that explores our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Monday evening at 8 p.m. I am a clinical psychologist, and I just try to find topics that are either popping up in the news or really just on my radar in terms of psychology and therapy and all kinds of good things in those categories. And so tonight we're going to talk about the issue of raising the new generation of snowplow children. I'm sure you're probably hearing this term a lot in the news these days based on the college admissions scandals and all that's happening around that part of our current culture. And so if you don't know, I'm sure you've heard of helicopter parenting and tiger moms. And so now we're talking about what we call bulldozer, I think lawnmower, and snowplow parenting. So we're going to talk about that tonight and really what happens when you do that with your children and what the outcome has been for our kids that we're discovering now with research. And this idea of sort of trying to really move every obstacle out of their way so that they have no real challenges. And I'm going to talk to you about why that's not such a good idea. So let me just first say this, that I'm going to talk about, you know, your typical child. I am not talking about children who have special needs or physical issues like illness or some kind of situation related to their physical being. I'm not talking about kids who have, you know, psychological issues. When I'm talking about just the classic sort of, you know, typical child, of course, all children can have medical issues and can have psychiatric issues or mental health issues. But I'm not talking about those who are sort of falling outside. I'm talking about their sort of typical ones. Okay, and so really, what is this idea of a snowplow child? And the reason why we're talking about it, as I said, is because we're really looking at what happened with this college, you know, the bribery scandal. Why did that happen? I mean, we know why, right? But what is happening that this is something that, you know, actually, and probably has been going on for longer than we realize. I don't think this is brand new. I think money and power buy people all kinds of opportunities and things in life. So, you know, in that regard, I don't think it's the newest thing ever. But this whole idea that we could have so many people involved in a scandal and then have it sort of be like, yep, not surprised. That's kind of what I'm talking about. And so really we're saying goodbye to the whole tiger mom and helicopter idea. The new kind of parent is really a parent who will stop at nothing to ensure their child's success. So the snowplow parent is defined as a person who constantly forces obstacles out of their kids' paths, just like a snowplow would. So they're really having their eye on the future success of their child. And really anyone or anything that stands in their way needs to be removed, okay? And so it does sound similar to helicopter parenting, but there are some differences. So helicopter parents hover and micromanage out of fear. They are observing like everything that goes into their child's body. They're monitoring every single move, and they're keeping an extremely close eye on things like homework and technology and friendships and things like that. And they're holding their kids really close to them in large part because of their anxiety about the world, about what might happen to their child out in the world should they be exposed to something. The difference with snowplow parenting is that they also might be micromanaging, you know, around diet and education and interaction, but they're also really doing it with their eye on the future. So what they're trying to really do is remove any pain or difficulties from their child's path, really so their child can succeed. And I think succeed is the big root here. It's that failure is not an option, right? That's the message, the underlying message to snowplow parenting is you can't be less than, you can't, you know, you can't fail. You know, not getting what you want is not an option. And not being rewarded is not an option. And so these are the parents who are often in the principal's office. I think you may have seen, actually there was a principal from the South, I think he's from the South, that had a big rant on Facebook in the last couple of weeks about parents and, you know, parents cutting the line. In fact, I was at drop off this morning and it happened. A parent just blew through the Thurston parking lot like there was, you know, like a fire as they dropped their child off. I mean, so on the one hand, I do think that we all could do a better job of respecting our children's environments. At the same time, I know we've all decided that we don't have to follow every single authority figure. And so I'm not, you know, I don't really have a super strong opinion about it. I think that in terms of, you know, how you navigate what feels right for you. But I think if everything you're trying to control and manage at your child's school, or if none of the rules apply to you, you know, I remember being back at El Morro and watching parents cut the corner at Crystal Cove all of the time. And I'd just be sitting there thinking, like, what message are you teaching your children? You're teaching them that the rules don't apply to them. And, you know, like I said before, I also believe in breaking rules sometimes. So this isn't a hard and fast rule. But the bottom line is when your main overarching goal is to prevent failure, to control, to not acquiesce to anybody else's requests, I think that's what we're talking about a little bit more. And so really there's this underlying sense of entitlement that snowplow parents are really operating from. And they're often the parents who, as I said, where they're in the principal's office, they're asking for extra courses or special allowances for their child. They might be blaming the school when things go wrong and often do not accept responsibility or let their child take responsibility for something. There's often a lot of blaming and defensiveness going on. And listen, I mean, receiving feedback as a parent and criticism or whatever you want to call it, critical thinking about your whatever you're doing is extremely difficult to hear. So I think all of us, our first go-to is defensive because it's such a tender spot for us, especially if we had a certain type of parents growing up that maybe we can't live up to that model and or we did not have great parents. And so we've kind of set ourselves up to be, I must be the perfect parent. Which, by the way, does not exist. So, you know, I always try to see both sides, but I will say that I know it's difficult. So, but let's just take tonight sort of in the extreme. So we're looking at the flavor of this, really, when you look at your own life, but I'm going to sort of paint the picture in the extreme. So what really happens is that when you are not allowing your child to take any real responsibility or downfall, what's happening is they're losing the ability to develop resilience. And I personally believe that resilience is one of the most important qualities I want my child or my children to emerge their childhood with. And it kind of stinks that sometimes more difficult childhoods do give you resilience. I always say it's the one big, huge upside to a difficult childhood. And it would be nice to not have that. But I will say that it does prepare kids and not always in the best ways, I know, but it does prepare them for life not going their way. And we do know that that is going to happen, right? It's just a function of life. And so what we're finding is this sort of snowplow style is really preventing resilience as part of a developmental quality for our children because they're not really learning how to develop coping skills or even real maturity to make decisions on their own. And as, you know, as psychologists and therapists and those in the field, we really worry about, you know, this generation of kids. How are they going to handle failure and learn to solve problems independently? Because oftentimes they've never had to. You know, I've got some examples later in the show, but I've heard, you know, all kinds of crazy stories of people being in college classrooms and getting poor grades and calling a parent in the middle of the lecture hall and saying, my mom wants to talk to you. I've heard about parents putting in grad applications for kids. I mean, these are kids who are already out of high school. So, I mean, it's really a large issue for us that we are sort of just trying to circumvent every struggle for our children. And what often is happening, I've noticed this too, and I think it's because of social media and the fact that, you know, no matter how good you are at something, there's always someone better a click away. But a lot of kids will start something and then quit if they're not great in the beginning. This idea that you have to really hammer away and work hard at something becomes something that they don't know how to do. And so it's really not serving them. It's really not serving them at all. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back with our little bit next of Moody with Dr. Sage, we're going to talk about where do we really see this most evidently. And I'm going to talk a bit about the college bribery scandal. And we're going to tie in snowplow parenting there. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Cameras exposed.
And welcome back to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage. And this is a show that explores our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Monday evening at 8 p.m. on KX 93.5 FM in Laguna Beach, our independent radio station here, which we are so blessed to have. And I hope you were someone who gave as generously as you could at our recent fundraiser. But we're always looking for new members to join along. So please don't hesitate. It's just a small little bit a month. It makes a huge difference for us. So if you have the opportunity, we would really appreciate your support. All right. So this show really takes a look at, therapy topics, psychology topics, just kind of whatever's going on. Or I have guests on sometimes who are other psychologists and professionals in the field and doctors. But tonight we're talking about snowplow parenting. So if you're just tuning in, snowplow parenting, if you've probably heard in the news, is really this new state of parenting where we try to literally and figuratively push all of the obstacles out of our child's way so that there are no experiences of failure for them. And you can probably think about that a little bit more. And when you really think about it, probably agree with me that preventing your child from ever really having any true experiences of loss or failure, if you're even able to do that, frankly, if life doesn't intervene, is really not necessarily the best thing for them, because we don't develop resilience without some difficulty in life. And, you know, I can promise you that you will never be able to prevent your child from experiencing difficulty, even if you somehow have the blessing of a really good life through their childhood and they leave your home. I know that you guys know as much as I do, life is just hard sometimes. In fact, a lot of the time. And so where do we really see this? Now, of course, the college bribery scandal is outside the norm. I think it wasn't shocking. I mean, it was, but it wasn't, knowing that so many parents have really become this way. And many parents are not. So I just want to say that, too. And as I go through this again, I'm going to reiterate that the kind of kids we're talking about, the snowplow parenting and the parenting styles, they don't apply to, you know, if you have children who have special needs, who have health issues, if they have psychiatric or mental health issues. I mean, certainly I'm guessing that that there can be some intertwining with snowplow parenting and mental health issues. But I'm really just sort of painting more of an extreme picture to get a flavor of what it looks like where we are trending towards trying to prevent our children from having any real experiences of difficulty. So really, in the codenamed Operation Varsity Blues, which is really the investigation that was going on, these were the ultimate snowplow parents. Now, I'm going to read some stuff to you from a New York Times article. But really, as I said before, snowplow parents are just starting to clear the way for their kids and shield them from difficulties and risks and the potential disappointment of the process. And as I said before, I don't think this is the newest thing on the planet. I think money and power have always brought opportunity, as I'm sure you would agree. But I think there has been a trend, and that's why we're talking about it. Now, you may have heard of, you know, we had this thing called helicopter parenting for a long time. And that really came into our focus in the 80s and 90s and grew out of this sort of fear about our children's physical safety, that they would fall off a play structure or be kidnapped or something terrible would befall them. And it was really about our anxiety more so than preventing, you know, difficulty in the future, which is sort of the differentiation with snowplow parenting. And so in the 90s, it kind of evolved into what they call intensive parenting. And we're just like always, everything is a lesson and we're always monitoring them. And, you know, we're sort of acting as teacher and coach and parent. And it's a pretty exhausting role, I think, for most people. But that's sort of where the trends were. And this is kind of when people began to sort of get really overly involved in tutors and weekend programs and traveling sports teams and sort of this excessive drive for doing your best, being your best, and that type of thing. And I've said this before, you know, I think, you know, we say to our kids, oh, just do your best. But the truth is that do you do your best every single day, all of the time? I don't. So, I mean, my overarching goal is to say, hey, you know, show up and do your best. But I also think we have to cut our kids a break. that sometimes they're just not on their game. They're not in the mood. They're tired. And, you know, or they didn't do well at school. And I don't think that always focusing on what you could do better, what you could do next time, you know, what that really says is that what you did is never enough. So I think there has to be a balance between helping our kids evaluate, okay, you know, what can I learn from this, and making everything a lesson to be learned from. Because I feel like the underlying bottom line of that is criticalness. And I'm not going to discuss it tonight a lot, but there is many of us in, you know, in sort of the psychology world talk about the inner critical parent, that we sort of internalize our own critical parents and become very critical of ourselves. And it does lead to lower self-esteem and depression and anxiety. And so there's really a balance between challenging your child and supporting him. And I always say that I think the hardest part is when to push and when to back off. And it's different with each child. You know your kids. You have some kids that you can just sort of give them a look and make one little, you know, gesture, and they kind of knock it off and they know what's going on. And other kids need a lot firmer boundaries and examples and consequences. And so, you know, parenting is the hardest game on the planet, I personally think. So speaking as a mom of four, I'm still learning every day, and it's hard. So this whole show tonight is not meant to be like judging of this whole thing. I think that the whole root of snowplow parenting is people who love their kids and who don't want them to have pain or be hurt or go through hardship. And I mean, I can certainly understand that. So, you know, I want to keep that in mind too. But we now know that parents are now spending more money on child rearing than in any previous generation. And today's working mothers spend as much time doing hands-on activities with their children as stay-at-home mothers did in the 1970s. So that's a lot, right? We're still doing most of the stuff around the house, the studies show, especially us working moms. And now we're doing all the activities with our children. Of course, fathers are too, and stay-at-home dads are doing great jobs too. So I don't want to criticize anybody in that regard. But the bottom line is we're all doing, especially primary caregivers, an excessive amount of caregiving. And texting and social media have really allowed parents to keep even closer track on their kids. And snowplow parenting is sort of an even more obsessive form of that. So there's this constant monitoring of where their kid is and what they're doing. And the whole thing, as I said, is really trying to block out, any barriers to the child's success. And I think this idea of success is also the root of it. It's not so much anxiety, although of course there's anxiety, but it's about, you know, going as far as you can and doing all that you can be, and preventing obstacles. And it's obviously, if you're a wealthier family, this is going to be an easier thing to do. And so it would make sense that wealthier families would be able to really, you know, push for the creme de la creme, which is, you know, college and grad school and things like that. And so for wealthy families, it's always been a sort of badge of accomplishment. And certainly in some areas of the country, it's about where you go to school more than others. But I would say even which institutions you obviously get into. And we know in the scandal, there are many of the sort of, you know, ivory schools. And so, you know, we're talking about obviously access to providing opportunities for your children that you may not have if you don't have a larger income. So the thing is that the college admissions have also become a lot more competitive. And this is, I believe, a huge reason why our kids are exhausted and struggling with anxiety and depression, because the old 3.2, 3.3 GPA doesn't cut it the way it used to. You know, you used to be able to do that and you could get into a decent college. It has become so competitive. Our kids are, especially the ones who are really driven, staying up late, going to bed late, getting up really early. And studies do show that the average adolescent does not really get tired until about 11 o'clock at night. So that's just part of what's happening developmentally from a physical perspective. So if they're getting tired at 11 and going to bed between 11 and 12 and getting up at 6 in the morning, some kids are doing zero period and getting up even earlier, you know, they're sort of prime for burnout and for either, you know, health issues or risk-taking behaviors, because they're even more exhausted and not able to think things through, which all teenagers are at more risk for risk-taking behaviors. They get a greater reward for it from a neurochemical perspective. So it's a tough world for our teens, especially. And the number of applicants for college has doubled since the 1970s. And the growth in the number of spots has not kept up. And so really it's, you know, unchanged at the very top level schools. But now it's not really a guarantee that your child will get in and do as well as you did as a parent. So here's just some information and some stats. Children born in 1950 had an 80% chance of making more money than their parents, according to a team of economists at Harvard. Those born in 1970 had a 61% chance of making more money than their parents. But since 1980, children are as likely as not to earn less than their parents did. So they're not as likely, they're about the same. There's no increase there. And obviously it's painful for parents to watch a child struggle. And obviously the more you do something and you get into a habit of sort of trying to clear these obstacles, it's going to be harder to stop. And that's why we're seeing these stories about not only did it happen in high school, but we're hearing all these stories about, you know, like I said before, parents calling professors at colleges and becoming involved in kids' dorm life and dealing with roommates and things that I can't even imagine, would have ever called my parents for. It was like, if you don't like your roommate, deal with it. You know, find a new one, go see your RA or whatever, RN, whatever it's called. I guess RA, it's been so long. Resident advisor, maybe they've changed it. Maybe you need to call an RN too. But, you had to really figure it out for yourself. And so now parents are getting involved in that. And it's really just setting up your child to be unable to deal with their own problems. In a new poll by the New York Times, I guess this was a group of parents of children ages 18 to 28, 75% 75% of these parents had made appointments for their adult children, like for doctor visits or haircuts, and the same amount had reminded their adult children of school deadlines. 11% said they would contact their child's employer if their child had an issue. So yeah, I'm trying to think of a scenario, at least for me, where my mom would call my boss for my high school job or my college job. I just can't even fathom. But 11%, and that's still small, but even 11% is surprising to me. 16% of those children in college had texted or called, these were the parents, let me say that again. 16% of the parents with kids in college had texted or called their kids to wake them up so they did not sleep through a class or a test. 8% had contacted a college professor or administrator about their child's grades or a problem they were having. 8%. Now, it's true that it is still done, most of this stuff we're talking about, by highly privileged parents and families who have connections and know-how to sort of stay ahead of their kids. And obviously families, like I said before, without resources don't have the same opportunities. And so I think this just really ripples into so many levels and aspects of our culture and of our society when we are letting highly privileged people and their children, no shock there, avoid certain problems. But these kids are still going to have difficulty, money or not. And so it is really important that we look at what we're doing. Now, I will say there are some issues and advantages to really letting your kids struggle. And I really want to talk about those in a minute. But before I do, I'm just going to say this, that, you know, parents have good intentions. They love their kids. We love our kids and we don't want them to struggle. And so that all makes sense. I mean, I think it's a sort of a natural outcome of where we are right now. But what you're really doing is, when we're doing that to them, we're taking away the ability for our kids to learn to plan, to learn to prioritize, to learn how to be resilient, and that we're really telling them this idea that I don't believe in you. I don't believe you can do it. So I'm going to do it for you. And is that really the message you want to give your child, that you can't do it? So you can't do it. Only I can do it. And then let me ask you, what happens when you're not around anymore? What's going to happen to your child then, or your adult child then? And what happens to your child's self-esteem when the bottom line message is, I don't believe in you. You know what? I just don't trust that you can do it. You know, it's just not helping them at all. And I think the other thing that really makes this oftentimes inflated is the idea of looking at social media, because our kids are seeing the perfection that is presented there and we're seeing it. And so we have these images bombarding us all day of what beauty and success and happiness and fashion and trends and traveling and everything at its highest level is meant to be for us. And, you know, people at all levels struggle. Even the people in, you know, our Instagram that we admire, people we like to look at, or people on social media or YouTubers or whatever, influencers, I can promise you that they have a lot of issues as well. They're just not showing them to us oftentimes. And so we need to help our kids understand that just because you see these images and these people, this is not what real life looks like. And let's talk about some ways that we can have these experiences. And no, here's where I am not going to help you so much, but I'll help you learn how to do it. I'll never forget when my oldest son was young, he had this friend who I just adored. And when they were in kindergarten, the mom would have her son call my son for a play date. And I was sort of taken aback. This little 5-year-old boy, hi, you know, is your son there? But it was so amazing because he really has become a very independent child. And I did the same thing with my son as he got older, even with ordering in restaurants. It was a big thing for me to have my kids look the waiters in the eye and order their meals. And it took many years of me saying, speak up, say it louder. Can I have a cheeseburger? You know, like that. But now they do it, and waiters will say, oh, your kids are so, you know, so polite. And I really appreciate that. So it's just little things, you know. Do I overdo things for them? Yeah, I do too. I'm not going to act like I don't. Those of us who had certain kinds of childhoods, I think too, want to be like perfect mommies and daddies. And so I think it's okay to try to protect your kids and do a bit more for them and nurture them and love them and be there for them and provide meals for them or whatever it is where you feel like you're giving. But we're just talking about, you know, doing everything, being the extreme, and really around preventing failure. Okay, so we're going to take another little break, and we're going to come back and talk about, you know, what are the benefits of letting your kids struggle? What are the benefits of a more challenging childhood if you are a parent who has had some struggles and you wished you hadn't and you feel bad? You know, I think parent guilt is some of the worst guilt on the planet. It's hard. We need compassion for ourselves. But there are some benefits. And so I wouldn't say create chaos and drama for your kids. But if you've had some, I'm going to give you a little hope and a little promise here about some upsides. And for those of you who don't really have a lot of struggle, but want to give your kids some room to breathe and experiment and maybe back off a little bit, I'm going to come back and tell you why that's a good idea. So you're listening to Moody with Dr. Sage, and this is a show that explores our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Monday evening at 8 p.m. We'll take a little break here on KX 93.5 Independent Radio and come back and talk about the benefits of a little bit of challenge in childhood.
Between a crucifix and the Hollywood sign, we decided to get hurt. Now there's a few things we have to burn. Set our hearts ablaze, and every city was a gift, and every skyline was like a kiss upon the lips. And I was making you a wish in every sky. How big, how blue, how beautiful. How big, how blue, how beautiful.
And meanwhile, a man was falling from space. And every day I wore your face like an atmosphere.
welcome back to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage. I'm a clinical psychologist, and this is a show that explores our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Monday evening at 8 p.m. on KX 93.5, Laguna's only FM. We are talking tonight about snowplow parenting, and in case you're just tuning in the wake of the college admissions scandal, we're just talking a bit about what it looks like when parents are in the extreme trying to literally remove all obstacles as a snowplow does for their children and really prevent them from having any failures and be more focused on success and sort of what the impacts of that look like. So before the break, I was just giving you a little more statistics and some facts and ideas about that. But I thought, you know what? I do think it's important because for some of us, we can't even snowplow for our kids. It just hasn't been an opportunity for us to do so. I would say that parents who have access to a lot of resources definitely have an ability to shield their children from difficulty in a way that most working parents do not. Working, I mean working class or, you know, typical parents who don't have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars at their, at their hands to do whatever they want with to sort of try to manage their kids. But even if you're not from, you know, from a situation where you're making a lot of money, certainly you can try to prevent obstacles in your child's path. And so I'm really talking about that tonight. But the truth is that we all face difficulty and our children will face difficulty. If you, by some, you know, act of God are able to prevent that in your childhood's actual childhood, I can promise you that that will not continue and that their luck will eventually run out and so will yours. And so I always say, I want my children to emerge from my home knowing, what do I need to do for myself right now? Do I need to take a walk? Do I need to sit down? Do I need to slow down and breathe? Do I need to study harder? What do I need to do to take care of myself? And for every person, it's different. And for every situation, it might be different. So I thought, you know what, for those of you and myself included who have had difficult childhoods, there is an upside. And this obviously ranges from extremely difficult to, you know, just letting your child have some failures. It's better to fail in the arms of your own parents than to fail out in the world with no one to catch you. And even if you try to continue to do this through your child's adult life, there's going to come a time when it's not sustainable. It's going to interfere in their relationships, in their jobs. And I do think it will affect their mental health because they won't be able to handle failure or not getting what they want. And as I was saying earlier, we're talking about snowplow parents in this sort of like extreme degree. And if your child has physical or health issues or mental health issues, it's a little bit different. And I mean, I think they can intertwine, but I'm really talking about your classic sort of, nothing's majorly wrong here. We're just trying to sort of micromanage and prevent and predict any difficulties from happening to our child. So let's say you couldn't snowplow for your child, or you didn't even try because it wasn't even an option. But maybe they've had some difficulties. Something's happened to them, or you've had a difficult life as a parent, and therefore your child has been affected or your children. Let me just give you some of the upside to having a challenging childhood, because there are some good things, even despite difficulty. So one of the first things I would say that can often come out of a difficult childhood is gratitude, is being able to know when things are good and when they're not so good. And cultivating the concept of being able to find gratitude for what's happening in your life, for the simple things, especially if you haven't had a lot of things work well for you, or you've had periods in your life of struggle. I think that loss and difficulty can give us a sense of gratitude when things are going better, because we know the difference. The biggest one, as I've always said, and I do believe this, and I think this has probably been researched, is resilience, is that going through a difficult childhood, as awful as it is, and I don't really wish it upon any child, but the truth is it's much more common than not, is that difficulty and hardship really create a sense of resilience, meaning that I can survive this. I can get through it. It might be hard. I might hate it. I might be sad. I might be angry. But there is a place to move through. I can get through it. And so children who go through difficulty often learn to control and adapt their behavior, their actions, sort of in ways that, you know, obviously can become unhelpful and unhealthy if it's in the extreme. Certainly trying to control things can be a very common outcome of difficult childhoods, as adults trying to control things. But the idea that you can adapt and that you had to sort of become more flexible in the way you dealt with things, or tolerate, which is a big word, tolerate periods of difficulty. Sometimes we just have to get through something, right? There's not really a way to go around it or go over it. We just have to walk through it and get through it. And so that can be an upside that really does help. When adversity strikes, you kind of know what to do, and you might even become someone who plans, who knows how to handle and problem solve, because problem solving got you out of a difficult situation. That's a huge upside. I think another one is the determination to be a good parent, or the drive to want to be a better parent than the parent you had. And that's what it often takes, is to say, you know what, my parents did the best they could, or maybe they didn't, whatever. But I do think most parents are trying to do the best. I mean, we're all human. Most parents are not trying to hurt their children. Sometimes their actions and choices do hurt them. But I think that, you know, most parents do love their kids. And if they're having a difficult time or making errors with their kids, it's usually coming out of their own wound, their own difficulty. And so I will say, if you're a parent who's struggling, getting help and getting therapy, reading books, listening to podcasts, the best way to help your kids is to help yourself and have some grace and compassion for yourself. But, you know, if you didn't have the parents you wanted, you can go overboard trying to be the perfect parent. And I think that has also happened to a lot of this generation. Many of us who are maybe snow plowing were raised in divorced families or broken families, and or parents who stayed married but were very unhappy. And so we're trying to be perfect. Obviously, there's other roots to that too. It's not just that. But in large part, we're learning from our parents. What does love look like? What does caregiving look like? What are my expectations for love and for boundaries and consequences? So oftentimes, if you didn't have a great childhood, you might be more motivated to be a better parent, and therefore maybe stop some of the cycle that you grew up with, where you are more present, you're more loving, you're more available. You're still going to be imperfect, and you're still going to make mistakes. So that I can promise you. I think it's an illusion. We think it's not going to be that way. It is. It's hard. It's parenting is just a slugfest. But it's also, I think, one of the most rewarding things on the planet. So yeah, you might, you know, decide to be a better parent and work on it harder. I think you get a sort of instinctual and more intuitive sense of assessing people and situations when you've had a difficult childhood or you've had to face adversity. You know, you sort of learn to sort of examine what's the situation, what needs to happen here. Maybe it's something that's happening with your friends or your social circle or somewhere at work, or you just have to sort of watch out for yourself. And so while that's not ideal for young children or any child in an unsafe way, hopefully if it's not too severe, but the reality is that it does help you, regardless of the severity, learn to sort of keep an eye out for yourself. You know, you're a little more aware sometimes of what could happen because you've already seen something not great happen. I would say that the emphasis on communicating can be an outcome that's positive from a difficult childhood, because you know that communication makes a big difference. You know, maybe you watched your parents fight a lot, or your siblings didn't get along well. And so you learned that negotiating and mediating can be helpful. And so those can be upsides, to learn how to self-advocate, to learn how to communicate. And maybe if you didn't do that and you sort of went in your shell, but you know that, you can also use that and work on it. And so I think that, you know, there's an idea that maybe self-reflection might be stronger because you've had to sort of look at situations and evaluate what you needed to do for yourself. And so in the ideal scenario, that would be the outcome. I think people who have had trauma and difficult childhoods and have faced adversity often are creative and more focus driven. I think the creativity is an outlet for pain. And that's the idea you always hear about comedians being so tortured, or artists. I do think that, you know, you look at lyrics from most songs, and musicians and artists and painters and writers and creators in general, most of the most beautiful things have come out of pain. Many of them have. And so I think that you will find there are people who are very successful who have come from very broken environments. And it often is this drive and this creativity or a drive to just be better and take care of themselves. It doesn't have to be creative. But I do think creativity is an outcome. And I will say that creativity can be extremely helpful with trauma, whether it's writing or journaling or painting, you know, things like that can be very helpful. And I would think the last one, I think that's one of the hugest advantages to facing difficulty and adversity in your life as a child, is it often fosters a sense of empathy for other people. That when you have struggled, you can appreciate the struggles of other people. I think that it's really difficult when you have, let's say, friends. I watch my kids with friends who really haven't had as much difficulty, if their lives have been super easy, and it becomes, as they mature, harder to communicate and to relate to. And it's no one's fault, whether it's the child who's had more experience or a child who's had less. But I think it does foster an empathy and an understanding of the world and a compassion oftentimes that if you haven't failed, you know, or you haven't struggled, you may not quite not get that so much. And so I will say that, you know, there's this idea of the wounded healer you hear about a lot in the psychology world. And I think there's sometimes that can be helpful. Other times it can be detrimental, depending on where a person is. But it does give a sense of compassion and empathy and understanding when you've been through loss and difficulty and pain. So on that note, I'm going to wrap up this show tonight on snowplow parenting by just saying that I hope you will evaluate and take a minute, if you haven't, to ask yourself, where do I need to just let my kid just, you know, find their way? And where do I need to step forward? Maybe you're a parent who doesn't step forward enough. Maybe you don't snowplow at all, and a little snowplowing wouldn't hurt. That's an option too. But I think it's a balance. And so, you know that you're really not doing your child any favors by trying to prevent them from struggling with everything. Obviously, we don't want them struggling all the time. And some things are just beyond our control. We can do the best job we can, and life just unfolds. And our kids go through a lot of trauma and struggle. But if you're on the flip side where you're trying to prevent all of it, please know that you're not serving your little lovey in the way that you want to. They need to have a little bit of, you know, a little bit of bruised knees and a little falling down here and there. They learn to survive. That is how we develop resilience and strength of character and the ability to overcome. You know, not getting into the college of your dreams will not kill you, but perfectionism will, let me tell you that. So, you know, we need to find a balance. Thank you for listening to my show tonight. This is Moody with Dr. Sage. We explore our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Monday evening at 8 p.m. on KX 93.5. I have a little bit of news business here as I wrap up. Let's see. I've been asked to talk a little bit about the 2019 BFA Fine Arts Exhibition, and that is May 2nd through the 31st this year. And the reception is Thursday, May 2nd from 6 to 9 p.m. The Laguna College of Art and Design Undergraduate Fine Arts Department is proud to present its BFA Fine Arts Exhibition, a group exhibition highlighting representational paintings, drawings, and sculptures produced by seniors of LCAD's BFA program in drawing and painting. The exhibition offers a selection of works of art developed as part of the senior thesis project, the mission of which is to guide seniors in creating a cohesive body of work that reflects a balance of individual conceptual growth and academic knowledge of the figure, still life, landscape, and interior. Once again, that's the reception is on May 2nd from 6 to 9 p.m. So thank you so much for listening. Have a beautiful evening, and I'll see you next week.